to the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast. Youth ministries rise and fall on the volunteers. So we are here to encourage and equip you. Join the conversation as we tackle the practical questions you are asking so you can help the next generation know Jesus.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Here is another conversation on the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast, and I've got Andy Steiger here coming from. Where are you joining us today, Andy? I see books everywhere in the background.
Yeah, I'm in my office in Abbotsford, British Columbia. The sun is out, so I'm hoping to get out of here soon.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And so people will know by the title and by the, in the show notes, this is a conversation around AI. You know, Sid and I are not experts at all. We were talking about it a couple of weeks ago. And so I'm just fascinated. If you could just introduce people first, hey, who are you and the ministry that you're a part of? And then I want to ask you some specific questions about what got you onto this particular topic, because you are far more learned about it than Sid and I are. So where do you come? What's the ministry that you're with? And fill us in. How did you get there?
Yeah. Thanks, Jeremy, by the way. It's great to be with you. I have the privilege of, I founded and I run an organization called Apologetics Canada. This is an organization that my wife and I started back in 2010. If apologetics is a new word to you, it's a Greek word, apologia, means to give an answer or reason. Specifically, as we find in the Bible, for the hope that we have in Jesus and to do so with gentleness and respect, as we read in places like 1 Peter 3:15 to 16, sort of idea. So as an organization, we actually got founded because of my concern for the number of young people leaving the faith. And I wanted to address that. I've pastored for 20 years now in total, and we do ministry across Canada, seeking to help people understand that they have good reasons to place their trust in Jesus and to continue to place their trust in Jesus. So that kind of gives you a little bit of, I guess, a snapshot of AC.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's so helpful, because for all of us that obviously we care deeply about the faith of adolescents, one of the big things, and we hear from youth workers all the time, maybe, for you that are listening, this is part of your journey. One of the things that makes you nervous is that teenagers ask hard questions. They legitimately want to know, not just, do you believe this? But like, is this real? Is this true? How can I trust it? And there's so much information out there. Were there any particular issues or things that you were noticing back when you started it that kind of inspired you? Like, hey, we've got to bring a thoughtful answer to these particular cultural questions.
Do you know, there are always questions that are kind of just your fundamental questions that people and young people in general are going to ask. Questions like, what's the meaning of life? Does God exist? Why is there evil? Do all religions lead to God? Is there life after death, right? Those are kind of your your core questions. These days, we're seeing more questions, things like, more specifically, what does it mean to be human? What's the value of human life? What leads to human flourishing? Much more in that vein, which is interesting from a Protestant perspective, because in evangelical circles, we haven't actually spent a lot of time developing a robust answer to those questions. I would say not as much time as our Catholic friends have. They've done a lot more work in that area, and I think we've got some catching up to do. But those kind of be your fundamental questions that I'm seeing quite regularly. But I do want to just say, though, that what I noticed was just a general interest among young people to have a place that they can raise their questions, that they can be honest about what's going on and what they're struggling with. And if I were to say anything, I mean, in some ways, I think that the ability to have a community that you can ask a question is even more valuable than the answers. Mm. Now, don't get me wrong, I think answers are important, but part of the journey is just actually being in a community that you can talk about what you're struggling with. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like we're going to have an answer to every question we have, but to be able to have a community to journey with in that, that's key. And that's what the church should be.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you think, and this is a little bit beyond the scope of this conversation, but like, sometimes there's so many things that people are wrestling with, and it can feel overwhelming, as if do we have to, as Christians, have an answer to every challenge and problem from a faith perspective? Like, is there, what would you say to some youth workers that are like, there's too many big questions out there. Like, I don't even know where to go or how to respond, or like students bring me some of these niche things. Like, even talking about human flourishing, like that's a really good question, but man, that requires an element of thoughtfulness. And so if there's a volunteer and they're like, yeah, but like, I work 9 to 5 and like I show up with students, like I'm not doing a bunch of reading on human flourishing and the, you know, doctor. So what do you normally tell youth workers or people that are kind of wrestling through how to respond to some of these big questions?
Well, I think that what's critical is that you kind of see yourself as you're ministering to young people, which I've done for years myself. So I get it. I definitely don't think that we can be an expert in all these different fields. But what we can do is a part of the bigger church, that we can understand that there are people within our community, within our churches, within our broader community that we can refer people to. And I think it is important, if you're going to lead people, that you do have good places you can send them to help. And so like this ministry in particular, or Apologetics Canada, or, you know, maybe, you know, there are a lot of other great ministries out there. There's lots of other great books, podcasts and the like, and being able to be able to reference them, or in the very least, and this is what research shows, is that you're willing to help them to find a resource or find an answer. Hmm. You know, that you're not just saying, hey, you know, interesting question, but I'm too lazy to actually help you.
Yeah. Well, and what I love about it, and you guys, and we'll link obviously Apologetics Canada in the show notes. You guys have got some of those big questions. And so, yeah, for youth workers, if, you know, the question comes up, you don't have to know everything, but as you receive some of those questions, be comfortable willing to find some resources or answers. And the truth is that, yeah, you don't have to know, you know, how to reconcile evil and suffering in the world with a good God. You know, that's been a question for, you know, generations and generations. And so because of that, some people have put some really thoughtful things together on it. I know you guys are one of them. And your series, obviously, that's available for folks. The Thinking One, is the Thinking series, is a great place that we can, you know, send people. So I love that. And I love that there's good resources. I love that you guys exist specifically to help us tackle some of these big questions. So let's just talk about AI for a second, because here's what happened. And this was Sid and I, and I had a friend that was texting me, and he's like, hey, do you know what's possible with podcasts now? And it was like, these podcasts are starting that are completely artificial intelligence generated. It's like, you put in a prompt and it spits out a bunch of text, and then you put the text into an AI voice generator, and like, boom, you're off to the races, and, you know, no human needed except for that initial input. And so we played with that. And so for you guys listening, obviously there's a couple episodes ago, you can listen to that interview I had with AI. Now, we're just stumbling into this. And as listeners, like in some ways we've saw ChatGPT show up, but it's still pretty fresh, but you've been thinking about this for a little bit longer. Is that right? What's your experience processing this idea?
So I don't know why, but just when I was, just as I was watching the culture at large back in 2010, 11, 12, I just began to see that this was the direction things were going more and more. Now, don't get me wrong, I've always been interested in this subject, even all the way back in the 90s when IBM created Watson, you know, and beat Garry Kasparov at chess. So I've been following AI for a long time. But when I really began to see that this was more than just a question about AI, but what does it mean fundamentally to be human, was more around in the 2010 and later. And so then this would ultimately lead to me speaking on this subject, writing a book on it called Reclaimed, and then also completing my PhD in the subject. So I've thought about this on multiple different levels, and at like the highest level, at the PhD level. And I've spoken on the subject, all over, including places like Cambridge University and lots of others. So like dealing with people that are like top in the field in this.
Yeah. So, and which is so brilliant. So not only am I grateful that we get to have you talking today, but also we've got you and we've got some other folks at different of our events coming up. So if you're listening to this live, obviously our YWC conference is coming up. Looking forward to Apologetics Canada being, you know, present with us and being able to think through these things in person with us. Okay, so you've been processing this for a while. Let me ask you this way. What do those of us that are just seeing like things kind of bubble up now, what do we not know? What are we missing? Because right now we kind of see like, oh, ChatGPT, it can write students' exams for, papers for them. That's kind of like a thing. We see kind of like, oh, there's like deep fakes or like, you know, people can generate music. That's like, so we're kind of seeing like those things that are on the, out in the news. What are we missing? What are the parts that, you know, you've been thinking about or others have been talking about that is not yet in the public conversation yet?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jeremy. And let me just kind of like step back as we talk about that. Like, what are people missing? Because I think one of the things that people are missing is that this is a conversation that's been going on for a long time. It's kind of like the invention of the internet, and then all of a sudden Google comes out, and people are like, "Hey, did you hear about the internet?" And you can like Google, you know, in these search engines, and it's like people that have been in this are like, come on, like the internet's been out for a really long time. It's just now, like when Google came out, it was just this monumental moment where it made like this quantum leap in its accessibility mm-hmm. and its usefulness. And I would say that AI has had a couple of those moments. And intriguingly enough, they haven't really caught the popular imagination until ChatGPT. And then all of a sudden, people really became interested in this subject because I would say we'll look back on this as we've looked at things like Google and Microsoft and sort of moments where ChatGPT will be like a historical moment going, okay, mm-hmm. this is when we kind of realized that AI was a thing. But just to bring people up to speed, a lot of the algorithms that we use with regards to AI were invented in the 70s and the 80s. They've been around for a long time. But what people don't appreciate is what AI actually is, what it's doing, and what these algorithms are doing. So we've had these algorithms for a while, but what we needed was two things. We needed the data and the ability to process that data to actually run the algorithms to get them to do what they do. And ultimately, that's what AI is. AI is really good at processing data in specific kinds of ways. And the challenge, of course, in that is that we've approached AI in specific ways. This used to be kind of a debate between Apple and Google, was how do you use AI? And there was this difference between artificial... Now I'm forgetting the acronyms. There are two different ways of using it. They actually had two different algorithms. Two different ways of responding to it. And one was, okay, do we create AI as a tool to be used to help people, or do we create AI as a way to imitate people? And what you began to see is Google for a long time was like, oh, we're going to use it as a tool. Apple was like, well, we're going to actually just create it to be like a person like Siri, for example. Now, kind of more of the businesses, though, are kind of taking on that Apple approach where they're like, hey, we're just going to make AI like a person. And we're getting to this place where, especially with ChatGPT and others, where it's actually very convincing that it can be difficult for you to know whether or not you're actually interacting with a person or not because they're so good at imitating.
Yeah, wow. That's an interesting... So I wouldn't have even thought that that was a distinguishing question at some point. And I guess we should also say that it is fascinating to watch what does take off and what doesn't, because in some ways there was a lot of... This is a little bit... Obviously, this is different than AI, but I remember the hype around... And it's not that these things have gone away, but like there was a lot of hype over the last number of years around the metaverse, the Facebook metaverse. There's a lot of hype around NFTs, you know, technologies that aren't like gone and yet didn't really snap like the way that all of a sudden ChatGPT, and it was like, oh no, this one's good to go. So I'm with you when you say like, oh yeah, this was a moment that we'll probably look back on. Okay. So in light of the fact that, yeah, the AI now, people are making the decision that it should replicate or should look like, or should feel like human. What are the challenges that you think that we'll end up seeing with our students around this? Cause it I'm guessing it's not just that we have to teach them how to write papers or figure out how to, make sure that they're not plagiarizing through ChatGPT. Like there's probably bigger implications to some of this technology right now coming out. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I think that there is. And, you know, one of the biggest challenges can just be even the way we'll talk about it, where we talk about AI as though it's a thing doing the thinking or whatever. I mean, you could even say this with when I reference, Watson by IBM that beat Garry Kasparov. It's like, well, did AI actually beat Garry Kasparov, this world champion chess player, or did a whole bunch of people creating algorithms that process data beat Garry Kasparov, right? So what I'm getting at is like, how am I viewing AI and how are we helping youth to view AI? Are they viewing it as a tool created by people for people? Or are they taking much more of this like ontological, philosophical approach to it, where we're kind of giving it this human status? And I do think that that's one area that we've got to be careful of. AI is processing human data to do things we want it to do. It's a tool. And in fact, that's how I would define AI in that regard, that it's a tool. So the challenge then with any tool, of course, is how are you going to use that tool? Are you going to use that in ways that are going to be helpful to people or ways that are going to be destructive for people? So I'm not like a doomsdayist, although I do enjoy shows like The Black Mirror and others that kind of say, hey, you might think it's going to lead to a utopia, it could be a dystopia, right? But I'm also not pessimistic to say it has to be a dystopia. I think we can do good things. Mm-hmm. The challenge is, though, is we're going to have to help people to think more clearly about the way they're using the AI. And to get into your question really specifically, Jeremy, is I think these AI technologies are just going to speed up our technological advances for the next little while. I think things that once were kind of ideas are really taking shape quite quickly, and we have to think more about. So, for example, you have deep fakes, and now I got to think more about the image I'm seeing or the voice I'm seeing or hearing. Is this real? Is what I'm seeing on the news, is that a true story or is that faked? We live in a time that I want to say cultural fight. That's not the word we were. Culture war. Sorry.
Yeah.
We're in a culture war that it's not just, I don't want to paint the wrong picture here. It's not like it's like the world against Christianity. I think it's more and more just the world against each other. Like everybody's fighting about something right now. And I think one of the reasons why we got so much fighting going on is people have just kind of realized that right now, the law is where a lot of power is to be wielded. And so if you want to wield that power, you need the political advantage to wield it, sort of idea. And so we're finding ourselves in the crosshairs of all that. And now you throw into that mix AI and its ability to be able to create different news articles or be able to try to persuade people in different ways. As a parent, okay, I have a 16-year-old. I just find myself constantly needing to walk with my kids through what they're seeing, hearing, watching in various platforms to be able just to navigate what is true, what's untrue, what is the motivation here or there. Like it's a challenging time to live.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm seeing.
I've said a lot there.
You know, that's good. So I'm seeing kind of two directions on the conversation, and maybe this kind of gives us, like maybe it's just we tackle each of these in turn. There's the you referenced the idea of deepfake and not necessarily knowing what's true, and I think about that. And the idea that we'll have to learn what it means to engage with this type of technology, and where do we decide that we just need to exit the whole thing? And I think as youth workers, this is maybe something that we're wondering about. I know, you know, before we jumped on, hit record on the mic, you'd even mentioned like, so, you know, we got deepfakes, but then there's also like chatbots. And so then we have things that are able to kind of, like you mentioned, replace human interaction. And so is that healthy? Is that wise? Where is the limits on that? What do we think about that? And so as youth workers, there's probably something around there. And then there's also, as you mentioned, like journeying with your kids. And also as youth workers, we think about, okay, how do we help our students understand and discern what is true? Recognizing that increasingly, I mean, we've known this for years, that, you know, there's marketing, you know, people are trying to make you decide to do different things, convince you to use their products. And so it's not like that's an unknown thing in our lives. And yet here we are, and it continues to ramp up. And all of a sudden, all these apps that we're using, there's these algorithms completely designed, unique to every individual, to draw them in and to inspire them to do specific tasks. And so how do we walk through our lives, and how do we equip our students in light of that? And then there's faith, obviously, hanging in the balance of both of those things. And what does that mean? So between those two, I don't know, is that a fair, like, two pieces of the conversation so far?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. And if we just take that first piece, because a question that I get a lot is people ask me, Andy, where's all this going? Like, where's all this leading? And what I see more and more, given the conversations that we're dealing with, is really just a breakdown of relationship at its core. And I know there's no surprise there, but you're seeing an increased level of individualism and loneliness. So I think this is something that as youth workers, we got to be really aware of. And I'm telling you, from my time doing speaking engagements, engaging with people, particularly when they get into their young adult years and later, they're going to set the tone for that in their high school years by determining what they are fundamentally committed to as a person. Mm-hmm. And that's where the Christian worldview is an important aspect of kind of setting that direction, that compass, if you will, or that commitment to, as I would argue from a biblical perspective, to community, that what is important is your relationship with persons, specifically God, and with people, and that this is such an important part of the church, that we are community. And I can't help but think that as youth workers, one of the most important things that we're going to need to do now and in the future is just laying down a foundation of community. And what does it look like to live in a community? What does it look like to be committed to community? What does it look like to realize that you need people and they need you? Because we're living in a time in which technology is able to allow us, this might be a different way of putting it for some people, technology is allowing us to be sinful in ways we couldn't be sinful in the past. And because I say it like that because I'd say sin's always been there, and our kind of desire has always been, our bent towards broken relationships always been there, but the technology hasn't always been there to let me act on it. Like, such as, you know, you can see that, of course, with pornography. But you can see that at a growing level with regards to AI, because AI allows me to withdraw from relationship and to create artificial relationship in its place. And the Bible has a lot to say about that, about what kind of relationships actually going to lead to your flourishing.
And would you say, because I know you've written the book on this exactly, but would you then say, as youth workers, it's good for us to recognize and plant a flag in the sand here to say, hey, AI relationships aren't the real relationships that we're called to? And that as youth workers, we have to distinguish and say the community, the real human beings interacting with one another is something we're called to?
Yeah, because I think one of the things that begins to happen is in that extreme individualism of today, this is what often takes place, is you'll be like, man, you know, Jeremy's just, you know, being a friend with Jeremy is just so difficult. Like, this guy, like, he has all these different, you know, needs and issues, and he wants to talk about this or that, you know, and then his dog died, and he's mourning his dog's death. You know what I mean? It's just so much easier if I create ChatGPT Jeremy, right, that is all about me and is just easy. That's the easy Jeremy. And I don't have to deal with all the challenges of the real world. And you can start to begin to see how you begin to withdraw from reality itself, and you begin to start to create this fake, you know, this facade of a reality around you that just caters to you, and it becomes all about you. And I would argue that this is just the direction that we've been shifting more and more, and I really see the gospel calling people out of that, saying, no, this isn't. That life isn't all about you, it's about God and it's about each other, and bringing people back into that idea of what does it mean to really live in community. Does that make sense, Jeremy?
I think so. Yeah. And it was, you know, one of the things that when Sid and I did this interview with ChatGPT and the voice, all that stuff, you know, the question about is what I'm listening to, is it real? Cause even like, I could take Sid's voice, and in a minute, I have a voice emulator that it sounds like him. And so I do kind of wonder, I'd be interested what your thoughts are on this, if our students are going to actually see the movement into this, where people can just completely disengage, they can sit in their basement, they can have online friends that aren't real people, they can interact, and if they'll actually become disenfranchised, if even, you know, their adults become a little bit disenfranchised to this and start to actually crave the real human being, like when you're in the room with them, and this might actually draw students back to in-person experiences in a profound way, that we might be able to actually, if we were the ones to corner the market on that almost at the front end, to say, hey, we're going to constantly create these spaces where real human interaction takes place, if that more and more our culture will desperately want that more than anything. Do you think we're going that way?
You know what's funny? I agree with you. I would say we're already there. I mean, even in my time with running my young adult ministry, the young adult ministry I was running, that I've run as a pastor, particularly, you know, more and more, I just realized that it is absolutely critical that you're creating community groups, that you are creating these opportunities for people to live in community with one another, and that you're constantly inviting people into it. Because here's part of the problem, like, Satan's crafty. He knows what he's doing. When you get people out of community and you get them into this more and more of a narcissistic, right, individualistic mentality, it becomes very difficult to break out of that. The world becomes a very scary place, and you would rather live in your safe place of life and everything being all about me than breaking out of that and getting, you know, out of the matrix, if you will, into the real world. And I do think, Jeremy, that this is going to become more and more challenging. So I think two things are going to happen. On the one hand, yeah, I think you're right. People are going to be craving it, but they're going to be scared of it as well. And so I do think, yes, we could corner the market on this, if you will, because I think this is what the church was always called to be. But I also think that we're going to have to probably draw some lines in the sand at some level. I definitely am not an advocate for thinking that we can just cut ourselves off from technology. I think that's foolhardy, because technology has always been with us. Even at the time of Jesus, you know, they're wearing clothes, wearing sandals, riding chariots. I mean, like, technology has always been a part of people. And so to think that we can just break from that, it's like, well, you can't break from it, but you're going to have to, like, kind of draw a line. Like, okay, I think you would agree that clothes is a good thing, right? But, and, you know, and you kind of work your way from there, but there is this moment where you're like, okay, what's too far? So for example, you know, we're talking about chatbots, but we can think of, like, you know, Christian Black Mirror scenarios, then we're going to have to think about these. Like, okay, is it okay to, what about a chatbot that is C.S. Lewis? Or could I be discipled by Jonathan Edwards? Like, AI could legitimately do that. It could read all of Edwards' works and then talk to you like Edwards, right? And you have to ask yourself, is that good for me? Is it, you know, or is discipleship as we understand that as Christians, actually a human experience from one, you know, or between persons, God and people, right? Living persons. And then another one, just to throw it in there, would be, I'll stop there.
Okay, let me ask you, because I have a question on that one. I'm with you. I don't necessarily want to be discipled by a chatbot that's emulating C.S. Lewis, but at the same time, I would wonder, is it worth being discipled by somebody that's outside of the experience of our current age? So it's a weird one where I'm like, oh, but everybody that's swimming in the soup of like social media and technology, wouldn't it be great if somebody could speak to my life from outside of that? And the only way is using the technology.
Well, don't you think though, in some ways, Jeremy, that we've kind of put ourselves into a bit of a conundrum here, because we've done things that I don't want to get too deep into this, but we hold churches that are simulcast, right? Mm-hmm. So now you've got a pastor that is speaking to you outside of the community that you live in. Now, I think we would all agree, well, if you're doing that, right, you're piping in some pastor that's from the other side of the country and you've got church plants going on. Well, you would still need community going on there, sort of thing. But I do think we're going to have to rethink some of this going, man, again, it's like, but is that good? Because now all of a sudden we're like, what you just brought up is now we got people a couple centuries from us, right? Mm-hmm. So am I just like a discipleship church plant in the future sort mm-hmm. of idea? Like that's a weird, that would be an interesting Christian Black Mirror scenario. But it's funny because we start to get uncomfortable with that one. Yeah. I would at least hope we are.
Yeah. Okay. So then as youth workers, if we're looking for a handle in the midst of all of this, which, you know, we have to have, you know, we think about it, we can process it, it's good, but to have a couple handles, I think what I'm hearing you say is that knowing about or prioritizing in person, being together in community, that we can never lose sight of that. That has got to be a part of our DNA no matter what.
Yeah, and the reason I'm saying that is because this would take more time just to fully flesh out. But what I'm saying is that, in fact, is what it means to be a human being from a Christian perspective. Hmm. From the Christian perspective, just quickly, as Jesus is asked continually, what's the greatest commandment? What's the most important thing to get right? He gives the same answer, and it's an answer that he's just not making it up. It's just, it's been throughout, like I'm saying it's not like it's a new answer. It was the same answer. He quotes Deuteronomy 6 and Leviticus 19. This is a very Jewish way of talking about what it means to be human. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. In other words, love God with everything that it means to be human. And then he adds Leviticus 19, and love your neighbor as yourself. That is the quintessential, you know, definition biblically of what it means to be human. If you're wondering philosophically, what do I mean by that? Well, we always define a created thing by its purpose, not its parts. And ultimately, mm-hmm. the Bible continually defines what it means to be human according to the purpose of relationship with God and relationship with each other. And so what I'm saying is that then guides us as we navigate technology and as we help youth to navigate technology. But if I don't understand that foundation, then I just don't even know how I'm going to navigate technology.
Okay.
It's not running from it. It's navigating it.
You got to go back and we got to say that again because it was so good. So we don't define a thing by its parts, but instead by its purpose. You said that more eloquently. How did you say that?
Yeah. We never define, we always define a created thing by its purpose. Here's an eloquent way of saying it. There's a difference between the parts that a thing is made of and the purposeful whole that a thing is made for. So if I were to ask you, Jeremy, what is that you're sitting on right now? You wouldn't tell me what it is by telling me its molecular level or the physical laws that it follows. You would say it's a chair, right? Because its purpose defines what it is. Does that make sense?
Fascinating. Yeah. Well, that has so many implications when we think about all the different things, even when we think about our students and like you said, what it means to be human.
Or AI. So now if we have a chatbot or something, a machine that's designed to imitate a person, we call this the imitation game or the Turing test. What do we have? Well, we have a human imitation machine. That's what AI is. AI, if you define it by its purpose, is a human imitation machine. It's either going to be successful or unsuccessful at that. So it's either going to, you know, succeed or fail, but that's what it is. And that then becomes a helpful tool to understand what I'm dealing with when I define a thing by its purpose. But I first and foremost got to understand what that means for me.
Mm. Yeah. I really like that. That's fantastic. I appreciate you bringing that. And I think as youth workers, even just carrying that as a key tag to bring to the conversation around any of these things, I think it just helps clear so much up. Yeah, in a really profound way. Okay. Maybe just in our last couple of minutes, if you can give us, so we talked a little bit, I mean, again, we're just talking a little bit here. But we talked a little bit about engaging with this new technology, about what it is. And then there's a sense of like, how do we discern in a world that's constantly changing? You know, maybe if there's do you have something again, like, is there a handle or is there a line or something that just helps people understand a little bit more about what's going on around them in terms of how they're being manipulated, but also like marketed to and how technology and the algorithm, like all this kind of stuff is not necessarily got their best interests at heart. How do you normally introduce that topic to somebody? Because I think we have to introduce our, you know, 10, 12, 15, 14-year-olds, 16-year-olds to that idea.
Well, this is the part about the whole conversation that's interesting, I think, is that we're in this big experiment together where we're all trying to navigate what to do here. So when I'm a part of conversations in the AI community at the highest level, it's not like they've got this figured out. They're walking within this too. And the question I hear them raise all the time is the morality question, is that AI has these different moral implications. And this is where we kind of find ourselves in this really unique place historically, where we're kind of in the seat of God, if you will, and that we're creating machines made in our own image. And now we're telling those machines what's right and what's wrong. And that then becomes very challenging with regards to what North Korea is telling their machines is right and what's wrong versus what we're telling our machines versus what, you know, different people are saying. Mm-hmm. That we, that again is a part of these deeper conversations. And then a part of all of that milieu is then how I understand right and wrong, and particularly how the Bible guides us into what's right and what's wrong, is now I'm interacting and I'm using these technologies in ways that are going to lead to my good and to the good of other people. So I think, because one of the things, Jeremy, that I hear a lot of young people telling me once they get into college is they're like, okay, I'm learning how to do this, that, or the other thing, but I keep bumping up to this bigger question of, should I be doing this, that, or the other thing? Mm. And so I think these are going to be important questions that we help our young people to get some good handles on as they head off into further education, as they head off into the workplace, and they've got to navigate some big challenges like the rest of us. And again, mm. I think we're in a historical moment where we're kind of figuring out our way.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much. I mean, this is on a different topic, but we just had our coalition class recently, and one of our professors is Walt Mueller. He's Center for Parent and Youth Understanding over the States. And we're just talking about, again, different topic, but how, you know, human sexuality has changed in terms of our, how we have a cultural conversation about it, specifically around, the consent culture. And so there's this fascinating article, I think it was the Washington Post, a couple of years ago that just, you know, from not a Christian perspective, but just said, hey, we've built our whole sexual ethic as a culture around, if we can do something, consent, and never thought to really ask the question if we should. And without going into the human flourishing thing, it was clearly an article about like, hey, we may have set everybody up for something that has nothing to do with their own good and their own flourishing. And so, you know, as a starting point to conversations with our teenagers, to have the question like, hey, what is good and what is holy and what is flourishing, you know, probably lays a much stronger foundation than what most of our kids get, you know, apart from Christian faith, I would think.
I agree. And let me just say something with regards to that, that kind of is germane to what we're talking about here. Because I would argue with what you're talking about there, at its root, at its foundation is the question of what does it mean to be human? Mm-hmm. And this is where I think books like Carl Truman's The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, mm-hmm. and if people want or are interested in that book, he has a less academic version called Strange New World. And I think he rightly identifies a major issue that's going on right now. And that is that we're living in a culture that has, by and large, devoid of God, come to the conclusion through people like Nietzsche and Sigmund Freud and others that what it fundamentally means to be human is to be sexual and to find sexual pleasure and to pursue sexual pleasure in any way, shape, or form. And you see this driving a lot of what's going on right now regarding identity in all of its form, particularly within the LGBTQ and elsewhere. You got to remember, so one of the things I like to remind people of is that the cultural train doesn't stop. The cultural train keeps moving. And I bring that up because I do think that we need to be aware that these ideologies have crept way further into the church than we like to think. I could say this even just personally. Like when I got married, Jeremy, I really was of the belief that when you get married, you get to have sex and you get to have sex as much as you want, and it is going to fulfill all of your desires. And, you know, in many ways, I was just waiting for this orgasmic wonderland that was going to give my life more meaning, purpose, and value. And lo and behold, it didn't. You know, and don't get me wrong, marriage is great, sex is wonderful, but if you think that it is going to fulfill the greatest longings of your heart, it's like Augustine says that the heart of man is restless until he rests in God. Mm. If you think you can rest in anything other than God, and that you will that you'll find rest, you know, you're just deceiving yourself. Mm. And I do think though that we've got to help our young people to really think deeply about, okay, what does it actually mean to be human from a biblical perspective, and what's actually going to lead to your good, given the different challenges that our culture is constantly presenting to our young people. And maybe a good way that we could put this, Jeremy, is that the church, I would actually say, needs to get really good, and in youth ministry, we need to get really good at being very specific about what we're for and not so much about what we're against. Now, don't get me wrong, we're always going to be dealing with the what we're against sort of thing. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because counterfeits are coming so quickly to our young people mm-hmm. that they're just used to just seeing counterfeits. And it's like they've never seen the real thing. They've never seen the currency. Mm-hmm. And as many people know, take a bank teller, for example, they don't teach bank tellers how to spot counterfeit by teaching them counterfeit. They teach them currency. What is the real thing? And by knowing what the real thing is, they can spot the counterfeit in its various forms that come at them on a regular basis.
I love that. Andy, I think that's a great spot to kind of come into a close here. And I think it's a good spot to also tee people up. We'll link this in the show notes. But your guys' course, The Human Project, is a free course that I know talks to all of these kinds of things. And you didn't ask me to promo it or to pitch it, but to be fair, it is exactly this. And
if they're on Right Now Media, we also have Branded, a series on identity is on Right Now Media.
I love that. I love that so much. And so, you guys feel free to dive into this stuff and or use it as part of your ministry. You can use this as a conversation with your students. If your students are asking these questions, which they very, very well may be, my goodness, you know, bring these and be co-learners, which is a great way to tackle any of these things as co-learners, as, you know, as two people following Christ and wanting to seek the truth. What a great thing to showcase to your students for them to experience alongside of you. So I would highly recommend all of those things. And certainly this conversation is going to continue to morph and change over the coming years. So anybody that's listening, if you've got a follow-up, if you want to chat with Andy, we'll drop obviously Apologetics Canada into the show notes. But if you want to have further conversation on this, just let us know. Cause this is it. This is where we're going. This is the current current big hot topic from a technological standpoint. Anything else that you want to wrap us up with, Andy, or anything that you wanted to clarify before we let people go?
No, I thought that that was great. I would encourage people, though, to come out to the events that you guys got going on, especially that we're going to be at, because if they're interested in this topic, we're going to be going deeper into it, and they can come ask questions. And like you said, if we can be a resource, or if we can point you to a resource, we really need to work together as we seek to train up our young people to love God and to love people.
I love that. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time on the Volunteer Youth Worker Podcast.